Oh, yes. Ricky Carmona, happy day after your birthday.
Oh, girl, thank you.
We got to spend your birthday together, all three of us, for part of it. Then you went to another show and a Daft Punk listening party, which I had to ask you what that means.
That means people get together and juke and dance and feel good. That's
guys,
what that means.
So happy to be here with you tonight, and also so happy for Ricky Carmona on his day after his birthday day. I'm Cameron Esposito, and you are listening to Wham Bam Pow. This is a movie show. It's a podcast about action and sci-fi films. On today's show, we will be talking about Barbarella. Also, we will be going through some news and some article stuff, and Rhea is going to tell us about a movie that made her. But before we begin the show, I just want to do a little plug here. So I know that there might be some listeners who are coming into town, into Los Angeles, for Max FunCon. And I wanted to let you guys know that every Tuesday night here in Los Angeles, I run a show at the UCB Theater called Put Your Hands Together. It's a stand-up show. Rhea is the stage manager on that show. She's also done a bunch of sets of stand-up comedy on that show. Ricky was there last night doing that show.
That show's banging.
So if you are coming into town, I just wanted to give you an invitation. On June 4th at 8 p.m., we will be having a show. If there's any Max Funsters that are in the area, please know that you are so much invited to that. And hey, let's say you can't make it to Max FunCon or to that particular show. I wanted to also let you know that if you're interested in us as people outside of this podcast, if you're interested in our stand-up, you can actually hear our comedy on Put Your Hands Together, which is, again, also distributed as a podcast. So you can just look for the Put Your Hands Together podcast, or you can follow us on Twitter at PYHT Show. So there you go. That's another way that you can let us into your hearts. Great idea.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
All right, back to talking about movie news. So, first of all, I didn't even welcome you guys. I just want to welcome to the show birthday boy, Afro spokesman, Ricky Carmona. How are you doing, Ricky?
I'm doing great. Thanks to my parents for making it happen. Making me happen. That's what's up.
I also want to welcome the lady James Dean, Ms. Rhea Butcher. How are you doing, Rhea?
Fantastic.
Yeah, we're
doing
all pretty
good.
Amped tonight. I feel like there's some jazzy energy in here. I don't know what's going on with us.
I just finished Cabin in the Woods. I'm ready to talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched the last 1 minute of Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, my God.
That's not a joke. I can't see scary movies, so I said, but I know how it ends because I read about it on Wikipedia.
Oh, man.
So I said, Rhea, stop it for the last minute and let's watch it together. And then I was like, oh, my God, you know, because I was invested.
It's like watching the last minute of Memento.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
But see, I have to find ways to. Okay, we don't even have to get into this now. But there will be, I will do a movies that made us about why I can't watch scary movies, and it'll be
sounds great.
It'll be so in depth, and you'll cry tears of joy and sadness. And so it'll be a whole thing. But let's start off the show with some recent movie news. So, just a little side note, because last week we talked about Iron Man 3. Drew Pearce, who wrote Iron Man 3, and also Pacific Rim, which we have talked about on this show, people being kind of excited about seeing it, he has been tapped to write Mission Impossible 5.
I saw that.
Now, here is why I bring this up, specifically to the audience of Rhea and Ricky. What are they going to have to do with this franchise in order to make us have a little bit of love in our hearts still for Mr. Tom Cruise? He has been falling off the Tom Cruise end of the Tom Cruise cruise ship.
I really kind of wish they would have just left it at 4 because that movie is great.
It's like a really good movie.
Fun action movie.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, seriously. What? Also, can I add that that's going to be released like right after he is in The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh, good
baby. Oh, is that right?
He is starring in The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
I'm so stressed out about Tom Cruise's. I just don't think he's okay. Is he okay? I just feel like he's not okay. And I just want someone to.
I'm gonna go back to the color of money.
Is there nobody in his life that can say, "Hey, Tommy, you know, take a couple weeks off"?
He's not of this world. You know, he's from somewhere else, and we just haven't caught up to. We haven't caught up to Tom
yet. That's what he wants us to think. Are you saying we're not on his level yet?
Are you saying
like we haven't gotten to his like
more
level
evolved
of awareness?
Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
What I'm saying is I'd like you to participate in this test.
Well, other things that are going on. So there's a lawsuit right now between Hasbro and Warner Brothers. What is it about? Well, it is about Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, boy.
Because Warner Brothers is trying to come out with a sequel to the 2000, I believe, Dungeons and Dragons movie that was produced by this Courtney Solomon. So Courtney Solomon apparently owns rights to Dungeons and Dragons, but then Hasbro also licensed, and I didn't realize this, they licensed all of their toys and games to Universal. All of their toys and games. So that's why we're seeing like Battleship, Transformers, Monopoly, like, because they just were like, here's it, here's what we got, pick and choose. So I just feel like it's very, first of all, I think it's interesting now living a little bit closer to Hollywood and then also doing this show, you know, and even somebody, when we had Max in here who's writing the Godzilla franchise, just to realize like what's going on behind the scenes to make movies happen, that there is so much adjudication. Like, there's so much law going on to figure out who has what percentage of writing credits,
right,
to figure out who has what ownership of what Hasbro, like, who even owns Dungeons and Dragons, that there's an owner and that there's another person who's like, but I also bought that in the package deal,
yeah,
with Transformers. Like, it's very interesting to kind of get into that side of movies.
Hasbro and Warner Brothers.
They should just roll for it, you know.
they should roll the dice.
But how many sides on that die?
20!
Oh, shoot.
Is it Hasbro before Warner Bros? Which one?
We could go all day.
Oh, my God. This is great.
This is just like a Trivial Pursuit.
Okay, oh, well,
sorry.
I kind of thought that maybe you guys would like to hear, since we're talking about that, some other things that are happening right now that I put under the category of terrible ideas for movies.
Ooh, I like this.
These are current projects that are happening. Sony recently secured worldwide distribution rights for Angry Birds, a 3D animated film.
Good Lord.
Guys, this is why we can't have nice things.
Why are they making a sequel to The Birds? What's going on here? Yeah. What is this?
Well, also, I just love the idea of anything being a success anywhere, and then the idea that now we need to put that everywhere. It's a little bit like, it's interesting to me that the Avengers, that they decided, they're like, what if we make a billion different Avengers movies? Then we make one major Avengers movie. Then we have a spin-off TV show. You know, like, it's like every property is now exported in every possible way. So my point is, Angry Birds the movie, can't wait to figure out what that pig and bird backstory is. Other things that are happening, ready? Medieval Times the movie.
Oh,
Jesus.
But we already, Cable Guy, we already did it.
Right. Yeah, right?
We already did it.
Can we get 90 minutes of that scene over and
yeah,
over again?
Exactly.
I'd watch that.
I'd watch deliver those
in
lines.
Medieval Times, the movie's defense, it is being optioned by two production companies, one being Bendersprink, who, as you know, put out Burt Wonderstone.
Of course.
So you know already,
oh, perfect
quality films in their bag. And then also Broken Road, another producer on this. Now, as you know, Broken Road as a production company put out Adam Sandler's Jack and Jill.
Oh, well, great.
You're just dropping
so
hits on
I guess
us.
What I'm trying to say is those are two great movies that stand up in any, not just court of law, but also court of opinion. So I can't imagine that Medieval Times won't be just well executed. And I bet actually, you know, I just hope that any female characters in that movie are played by men in wigs.
They better be.
What's yeah. funnier than that? Except for Kristen Wiig. Kristen Wiig in a man suit. In a wig. And then this is the final one. And so Seth Graham Smith, he is the dude that wrote Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and he wrote Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Now, here's the thing. He wrote those books, and they did super well, but he has yet to have, like, a real Hollywood hit, because he also wrote the screenplay for, what is that? It was a movie that was dark. Hang on.
Who's in it?
TV show. It is Tim Burton.
Dark Shadows.
Yep. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. So he also wrote that, which flopped. And then Abraham Lincoln, Zombie Hunter, didn't do very well. So he has been tapped to remake Gremlins.
What?
No.
No.
Yes, he
I don't
has.
Hear that.
He has. I know. I feel really that. Upset about it
no,
myself.
No, Joe. Say it no. ain't so, Joe. Dante.
Can we have a pitch-it meeting? No. No.
I mean, I guess I just feel like I understand that he's a great writer. He made books that people were interested in that were based on other books, plus adding one or two things to those books. So I just feel like that's a beautiful, it's a beautiful movie, it's a beautiful franchise. I just hope he's not going about it by just adding other things to the Gremlins.
What if he just
Gremlins
put the Ghostbusters in there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gremlins versus Ghostbusters, like an Alien versus Predator.
Pride
kind of
and Prejudice and Gremlins and Ghostbusters.
And whatever else you want to see,
and
really.
Whatever's around. Yeah, just and who's just, ever wanna, on the on the
If you
want to
play Angry Birds while you're watching it, you know, just do whatever you want.
Unbelievable.
Well, I'm so sorry to let you guys know that. But anyway, we'll see how it goes. So I will be back after this. We will all be back, actually. We're going to talk about an article that Ricky brought in for today's show. Well, welcome back from that sweet guitar lick. I hope it was beautiful and that you changed your life. And also, Ricky brought in an article for today's show. And Ricky, tell me what it's called.
This article is called Blinded by the Light, Why J.J. Abrams' Lens Flare is Not a Big Deal.
And this is from, what was it from?
Film.com.
Film.com.
Yes.
By the way, good on them for snapping that up. Like, whenever they were like, I think this internet thing's going to work out. Film.com.
Boom.
Oh, come on.
What's the name of your website? Life.com. Yeah. As general as computersinternet.com.
I've never visited like butts.com, but that's got to be a site that's worth a bunch of money.
A buttload, probably.
A buttload. All right. So anywho, talk to us about this article.
This is an article talking about J.J. Abrams has a reputation, which he acknowledges and admits in this article, he took on a very specific visual style in his movies where he has there's a lot of lens flares in there. For people who don't know what lens flare is, I brought in the definition because I like to do homework.
Nice.
Lens flare is an effect caused by light that has been scattered over a camera lens by internal reflection. In filmmaking and cinematography, lens flares often used intentionally to invoke a sense of drama or to screen the artificial textures of CGI-edited motion pictures.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
I would say another way of breaking it down is, so generally it looks one of two ways. It's either like a haloing sort of a direct light that's happening on the screen, or it's like the haziness
Absolutely.
That we get. It's sort of an Instagram filter
on the
world of the film that we're looking at. And so, as you said, he is
notorious, basically, for using this, to the point where he even admits, like, I probably go overboard with it.
I read that in there. He's like, all right. Yeah. I do use this too much. That being said, it's great. Like,
and honestly, I do. I love it. I love seeing lens flares. I do think J.J. Abrams has a very specific visual style. He reminds me of, I mean, everybody mentions Spielberg. He's a very Spielbergian director. But he also reminds me of, like, John Carpenter in the sense of just the way he really knows how to frame his camera, how to fill everything in. So when you're watching the movie, just really engaged by everything that's happening.
You know, I was doing a little bit of research on, just not research, but like reminding myself of JJ's filmography, because I knew we were going to talk about this tonight. And something that I always forget about him is that I think we're so, if you're into movies or even TV, like he's somebody that's so present in the last like 10, maybe even 15 years, but he's only directed 5 films.
Yeah.
And that's interesting to me, because I guess in my mind it's always because he like was the creative source of something, or because he was the producer, or because, you know, all of the other things that he's done in other ways. Mm-hmm. He wrote stuff. So it's interesting to me to think about the fact that he has such a style.
Yeah.
5 films in. You know, yeah, like not yeah, that absolutely. That's not that that's not possible, but like, yeah, lens flare is sort of my thing. I've done it in all my 5 films. It just seems kind of funny to me.
It's very, and it was, I think the reason that it stuck out so much was because it was very prevalent from the get-go. Mm. I mean, Mission Impossible 3, that movie looks... That was like, when I started watching Mission Impossible 3, I could tell right away, like, this is going to be different than the other ones. This is going to look... It's going to look good.
Do you like that one, though? Do you
I
like
do.
Mission
yeah,
Impossible 3?
That got me on board. I was like, I like J.J. Abrams, because that was still right when, like, Lost was on fire, and I was not getting into anything else. I was just watching Lost, filling myself in with that. And I was like, oh, he's making movies now? I'll give him a shot. And then I saw that and I was like, oh, this is great. This is fun.
I have fallen asleep during that movie, which is not...
During Mission Impossible 3?
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
I do not fall asleep during movies.
Me too.
You also fall asleep during that?
Yeah, I don't think I actually finished it.
Yeah, I've never seen the whole thing. But the other thing that I would say about him is, so it's interesting that he would have... So, like, I was a huge fan of Alias. I really like that television show. But I also think that he... It's interesting because he seems like a guy who's, like, great at starting projects.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, Like, he almost just like, well, can you guys figure it out? Because it's like, right. He's on to something else.
Right.
So
I know that happened. That happened with Lost.
Totally. I've heard the same complaint with Lost.
It got, like... Everybody would always associate it with, like, J.J. Abrams. And I think by, like, season 4 or 5, Damon Lindelof and Damon Lindelof was like, hey, everybody, actually, we're the guys running the show right now. J.J. stops in every once in a while, but we're doing things.
Orsi.
So what you were...
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. What the upshot of this article, though, is basically like, hey, relax. Yeah, he has a style, but it's going to be fine. You know, he's doing a thing that... You know, other people have had this style. Spielberg has had a similar thing going on. And I guess what I was wondering is, with what we know about his background, that he can be somebody who gets like really into something and then just kind of seemingly drifts away. I wonder if giving him like huge franchises like Star Trek, even Mission Impossible is a pretty big franchise, Mission Impossible, Star Trek, and then also now Star Wars, do you see that he could be the kind of guy who rests on his laurels at all? Like, he's like, hey, I'm a lens flare guy. And then he just, like, makes, like, movies that all look the same because he thinks in his mind he's figured out his style.
That's a good question. I think he's been building kind of like a library of what he does. And now he's getting on these big franchises that he can hold on to for a while. Like, I don't think he's going to leave Star Trek. I think he's, even if he stops directing them, I think he's going to be pretty hands-on with that. I think he's going to be pretty hands-on with Star Wars. Everything he does outside of that, I don't know how much. I think it might be one of those things where you're like, all right, I have an idea for a TV show. I'll direct the first episode. Who wants to do the rest?
I guess I just want to see the guy land the ship. You know what I mean? Like, land the ship? That's not a thing.
Sure.
I want to see him land the plane or dock the ship. Is dock a thing? Is that even when you save a ship? I want to see him park the car.
Park the car, JJ.
I want
car,
to see
JJ.
Him park the car. Like, he's great. He's a great, great drag racer. But I just want to see him park the car. What do you think, Rhea, about...
About the lens flare specifically?
Yeah, lens flare specifically.
Well, I really liked it in Star Trek because I feel like maybe because I was... pretty aware of Star Trek stuff, and that is not what it's ever looked like. So I feel like it fit really, kind of like what you were saying about Mission Impossible, Ricky, is it like revamped those things, you know, like Mission Impossible
That's
kind of looked like, almost like a James, or, you know, a Bond movie from the 90s. It had that feel in the first two, and then the third one, it was like, boom, and then the fourth one, it took off still. And then Star Trek too, like Star Trek was pretty stagnant, even in the films. I mean, the fans really love them, but their look just still looked like TV.
Yeah, exactly.
So you think bouncing that light off of there, do you think there's some element of that that actually looks like how we really do see the world? Because, like, when you encounter things in, you know, in our physical space, that actually, like, that happens with our eyes. Like, in the world that we see, you know what I mean? Like, that.
I wish I could see in lens flare. I wish my eyes had that effect.
But I just mean it's like adding another... element that isn't just a perfectly clean, crisp shot with nothing else going on, where it's like clearly on a soundstage or something. I mean, it can look more like it's on a soundstage, or it can look less like it's on a soundstage.
Yeah, totally.
Depending on how you're using it.
Yeah, for somebody where I'm always looking at the frame and like just trying to figure out, man, how'd you do that? How'd you do that? He's more movies he makes. He's on that list of directors where it's like, all right, I'm going to be looking for these things. Like, if I go see a Michael Mann movie, all right, I'm going to be looking for a lot of silver and blues. If I go see a Terrence Malick movie, a lot of hands and weeds and shit. You know? It just gets me excited because it's another part of the movie that you're going to be able to enjoy. I'm excited about this new Star Trek movie.
Me too. I'm super excited about it.
First of all, great convo, guys. I love what we chatted about. I don't know if I give a shit about him yet or this new Star Trek movie, but I can't wait to see it. Plus, I hope that somebody, hey, if anybody gets any promotional glasses, you know, like drinking glasses, love me some promotional drinking glasses. And I know for a fact they're going to come out for this movie. It's a big enough release. They'll definitely have Star Trek-themed Slurpees.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so super into that. And we'll be back with more after this.
Hey, Hey, folks, this is Kevin Allison of The State and the podcast Risk, where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. X-rated stories, outrageously hilarious stories, tear-jerking stories. You won't believe how real and raw and surprising Risk can be. You've heard people say, ooh, too much information. Don't be sharing that in mixed company. Well, at Risk, we say screw that. Anything goes. So you've got a treasure trove of jaw-dropping entertainment to dig into, my friend. Look us up at MaximumFun.org or, of course, just go to podcast at the iTunes store and search for Risk. Risk!
And we are back. Well, we've been here the whole time.
We never left.
We never left. But coming up right now, exciting new part of the show. So usually we have a segment called Pitch It. We are trying to incorporate new segments into the show. So last week we started, Ricky Carmona brought in a movie that made him. This week, Rhea Butcher bringing in Movies That Made Us, : Rhea Butcher. what movie did you bring in to talk about? It's something that's formative in your film watching experience.
I don't know if you guys can guess what movie this is going to be. If you can hear the smile in my face.
I think I know what movie you're going to talk about.
It's Back to the Future.
Okay, well,
it is, of course, Back to the Future.
Launch into it.
Sure.
I don't want to waste a goddamn second. In
absolutely.
Fact, we should go Back to the Future and erase yeah. where I said I didn't want to erase.
Get in the DeLorean.
Skip over that minute. Okay. That movie absolutely taught me how to watch movies and how to enjoy them because I can remember seeing it for the first time. My mom rented it.
How old do you think you are?
I think I was 6 or 5 because that movie came out in 85. Took a lot longer for that to come out on video. Also, I was 3 in 1985. I don't think I would have understood many of the themes or even what was going on. But my mom played it for me, I think, on a Saturday morning and sat me down and said, I think you're going to like this movie, but there's a lot of swearing and some words that you've never heard before, and you're not allowed to say them. And so then in that opening in the DeLorean chase scene, Marty is saying, like, holy shit, and all this, he's all that. And I turned to my mom and said, Mom, is holy shit a swear word? So, like, every time I swear to my mom now, she always says that back. Anyway, so.
Adorable. Can I ask you even a question on that?
Absolutely.
Did she sit you down and watch other movies with you in that way?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Where she would say, like, I think you're going to like this movie?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Would they be, like, adult movies?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was... We came very late to Terminator, but we also, my mom and I both really love that the first two.
Did you watch Terminator with your mom?
I did.
First time you saw it?
Yeah,
wow.
She would
Terminator
watch them first.
The first time I saw it. That's
and then
great.
She was like, okay, now you have to close your eyes. And she would fast forward through the sex scene, but I could watch all the other violence and stuff.
Wow. My parents don't super love movies, and neither do either of my sisters. So yeah. I feel like all of my film watching experiences were like me by myself. Like, am I going to get murdered right now? Because Terminators are scary. Anyway, go back to the Future. Tell us what you were going
to
say next.
I will go back to Back to the Future.
Boom.
Well, it just... That movie immediately, first off, I think is the first time, you know, because up until then, I think it only seemed like Sesame Street or like 101 Dalmatians or something. It was the first time that I saw somebody on screen that I related to, that I like saw myself.
Which is who?
Marty McFly. Like, I actually saw that guy and was like, that's who I want to be. Because I was so young that I didn't even know like what really a girl and a boy were. Like, I still, like, that's who I wanted to be. And that's who I thought I was going to be. Like, he played the guitar, he, like, skateboarded, he did all this stuff that I wanted to do, and, like, kind of looked like me, to me, at least, you know? He was, like, cool, but, like, a nice guy. I don't know. I just loved that. Like, I totally related immediately. I also think, looking back in retrospect, that I related to that movie a lot because my parents are divorced, and so he, like, went back and gave them a better chance at everything, and just, like, relating to a kid wanting things to be better. Not that I had it bad or anything, but... Just wanting your family to get along better.
Wow, yeah. I mean, that's a huge and deep theme in that movie.
Yeah,
I can imagine if you're a kid that's going through that, that's definitely something that stands out to you.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Oh, just from like a movie watching standpoint, like for a while, I would say my favorite movie is Back to the Future. My favorite film is like Godfather 2 or something like that. Because I was like too embarrassed to say that Back to the Future. I think I will say that I actually think it's one of the best movies ever made.
Say that shit, girl.
Because.
But also, what at what age were you using, when you being like,
oh, probably 12.
Yeah. Because you sound very mature throughout this entire process.
Absolutely.
At 12. Well, I mean, if we're talking about cinematography.
Yeah. yeah, but that movie, and I think I've actually said it before when we were talking about like Oscar snubs, like it is one of the tightest movies, other than maybe Alien, where like there's nothing's wasted, there's nothing that doesn't make any sense. I mean, there's plot holes because it's time travel,
of course.
But other than that, it is just like the tightest movie that everything makes sense and everything folds in on itself. It references itself constantly. No matter how many times you watch it, you get new things every time. Like, as you get older, you start to understand more things of, like, why the adults are saying these things, or, like, why it's funny that a mom would say, like, oh, you're starting to sound like my mother, and that's his mom. You know, like,
yeah.
you don't get that when you're 6 years old or whatever. So
right.
I just love that movie, and I love the pop culture tie-ins, and I always enjoyed the product placement. And now as an adult, I'm like, well, that's a little... Yeah, that's kind of weird. But as a kid, I loved the like Pepsi Free and all that.
But they do interesting stuff with the product placement, which is where they tie in the time travel to the specific depiction that's happening with
Calvin
the products.
Klein.
Yeah.
Calvin Klein's a great
Yeah,
gag.
That's
such
a
great
There's
gag.
A lot of other, you know, like when they go to the future and then things look different. So I will say that's pretty Was that the first movie you think that did that, where they had the different representations of the, where it was like Pepsi in the future?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like that was the first movie that decided
that
absolutely
with product placement, which is pretty brilliant in and of itself.
Absolutely, those Pepsi bottles in the future are amazing.
Yeah,
they're
it's
so
pretty,
awesome.
It's pretty interesting stuff, and. What's funny now is that they can still make that stuff. Like Mattel can still make even non-functioning hoverboards, or like they Nike can make those. And people are so into the concepts that they included in the Back to the Future series that people are still buying like the things that don't really exist
Absolutely,
that they wish existed from
Absolutely.
That movie. I want to ask you one final question,
sure.
and then we're going to zoom out of here, which is, so Tom Wilson
yes.
is also a stand-up comic. He plays Biff in this whole series.
Yes.
And I know for a fact that he was at, I mean, just tying it back to the beginning of the show, he came and did a show at Put Your Hands Together. He came and did a set, and like he sings about being Biff, and he's also just, I mean, he's a super handsome guy. He's also a really nice guy.
One of the nicest
so
guys.
So nice.
Awesome.
And we're trying to get him on this show also. So,
yeah.
So tweet him and tell him to come on the show.
Everybody.
But also, what was that experience like meeting him for somebody that had seen his face so many times as a child or even an adult?
Since moving out here, I've met a lot of people that I really liked and have been familiar with, like comics and mostly comics. So I was like, oh, it's going to be totally fine. Like, you just play it cool. Just be nice. He's just a human.
He's just a human.
He's just another person.
And he's also a comic.
He's so nice.
Like,
I know.
He's got a lot in common.
That people, like, kind of attack him about that. And he doesn't just want to be
he's
known
very
for
protective.
That.
He's and, very like, protective about that part of his
I'm such
career.
A fan that I know that. And I was, like, not going to say anything. So it's totally cool. Then he went on stage and did the song and did some lines, and that was when I physically jumped up just watching him when he said McFly, like this, and I just like lost my mind.
Gosh.
And then I talked to him later, and I actually thought I was gonna faint. But I was looking at his face, and I was going, "This is a man that I have seen like every day of my life. Probably if you lined it up, how much I've seen that movie, it's probably every day of my life I've watched it, and I'm talking to him. It was pretty great.
Well." Also, so here's the other thing, and I just want to end by talking about this. So, yeah, that is interesting, because he's still a working stand-up comic, and he doesn't super love to have people only know him for Back to the Future, but I am really glad at the same time that you got to have, like, a heart-to-heart, like, a real human conversation with that person.
Totally.
That is one of the interesting things about living in L.A. is when you have those moments where you're like, oh, this is just another working person in the entertainment
industry. Yeah,
I'm just a person that worked, and then they slip into their line. You're like, by yourself! But anyway, we will be back with a full review of Barbarella after this. All right, welcome back. We are about to give a review of Barbarella. I just want to also, before we get there, I want to tell you guys that we are all on Twitter. Rhea is at Rhea Butcher. Ricky is at Ricky Carmona. I'm at Cameron Esposito. We love to hear from you guys. We've heard from a lot of people that are listening to the show. We're calling them Wham Bam Powers.
Yeah, we are.
We also have a Tumblr, which you can follow. We also have a Facebook page that you can join. And then we're just going to give you updates on things that we're interested in or things that relate to the show. We're not going to bug you a ton. It's just like a cool resource. So if you're into that stuff, please reach out to us. We love to hear from you. It really means a lot. Makes the show worth doing. So thank you so much for all of your response. And we're into it. We're super into it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Also, let's get into this. So now we're going to do a review of a dick flick. I will say this. Barbarella is currently available on Netflix Watch Instant. Sometimes we do current movies that are in the theaters. Sometimes we do things that are available on Netflix Watch Instant. We do spoil the movies. So if you haven't seen Barbarella and you're worried about getting spoiled, I would pause the show now. Go watch it. Come right back. We'll be here. And if you don't give a shit about spoilers, great. We're going to be hilarious anyway. You don't need to have seen the movie to figure out what we're about to talk about. Great. Okay. Excellent. Moving right along.
This is it's a dick flick for Barbarella. Can it be a titty flick?
Okay, it's a titty flick. You're right. It's not a dick flick. Oh my God. This movie. Okay. I can't even wait to talk about this. First, I got to give it a little bit of context because there is so much going on with this movie.
Yeah, this is going to be impossible.
Yeah.
So this week, we chose Roger Vadim, I don't know. 1968 French Italian. That's right. It's French. It's a French Italian movie.
Yeah, it is.
Film Barbarella.
For Italian.
This movie has so many different connections to the entertainment industry that I'm actually just going to start there.
All right.
I just want to first start with. Okay, so this came out in 1968. So in the film, there's a gentleman called John Philip Law. He plays Pygar. The angel. There's an angel, a sexy angel, in this movie. Oh, I guess I should say that the movie is generally about a young woman who travels from planet to planet in this specific installment. It's based on a French comic where it's a young woman travels from planet to planet. In this specific film, she is given the task by the president of Earth to locate an Earthling who is called Durand Durand.
Oh, yeah.
And bring him back to Earth. Now, what's amazing is that going into this movie, I had no idea that that's what Duran Duran was from.
Yeah.
I had no idea that's where the band got the name. And it's weird because it means so much now to us watching, because that was such a huge band. I was saying to Rio when we watched it together, I was saying, like, is there an equivalent movie where, like, because they say his name like 100 times, and every time they say it, you think of, You can't not think of this epically huge band.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Duran Duran. Wait.
Duran Duran. Right away. All the time. Every time I was thinking that.
I can't believe what they did. I mean, speaking about time traveling, like, I can't believe that how they went and, like went back in time and said, actually, this movie, we're going to fuck with it. Like, it's crazy. So anyway, but yes, that's part of it. So. Back to this. John Philip Law, he plays Pygar the Angel. He, in the 60s, he's like a B-movie sex symbol and a frequent guest at the Playboy Mansion, friend of Hugh Hefner's. Anita Pallenberg, who plays the Great Tyrant, she at this time would have either been dating the Rolling Stone Brian Jones or the Rolling Stone Keith Richards, because she was dating one of them in
both?
67 and one of them in the later part of 67. So
what?
I don't know when this was filmed, but she was dating Astone and then switched to another
Stone
and then had an affair with Mick Jagger. So like
what?
Already a close personal friend of Hugh Hefner who's going to the mansion. This is in the 60s when Playboy is having its heyday, you know, and also a chick who's just with the Stones all the time. And also this dude, Milo O'Shea, he plays Duran Duran in this movie, which I just have to say as another funny tie-in, later reprised his role for a concert film that would play at Duran Duran concerts. They actually had him play himself, and it would play in the back of Duran Duran concerts.
There's a reason Duran Duran are musical geniuses.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
And that right there.
I love it.
Another one.
And another thing that's interesting about this is that, so David Hemmings is another dude in this movie. He's plays a character called Dildano. And he, not a huge actor, but he went on to direct a bunch of TV in the 80s, including episodes of Heat of the Night, Murder, She Wrote, The A-Team. He also directed the pilot for Quantum Leap.
What?
So oh my God. Also, weirdest person in the movie of all time, Marcel Marceau.
Marcel Marceau's in this movie.
Most famous mime that has ever mimed. So this movie is, just think about this collection of people. I just want to first bring that up. That it's, and of course, we should say, and I'm going to get to the star of this movie, Jane Fonda.
Oof. So,
and also, the producer on this movie is Dino De Laurentiis, who's Giada's granddad, Giada De Laurentiis from like all those cooking shows. So if you're ever like, hey, how do you make it as a TV chef? Just have your granddad produce Barbarella before you're born. So as I said, this film also stars Jane Fonda. So I just want to, first of all, I want to take a moment and just reflect again that that's who's in this movie. Like all of these people who are not, none of them ends up being a huge movie star, but they're all kind of playing a bunch of different roles behind the scenes in Hollywood and in the entertainment industry and even the music industry. Like they're all over the place. There's a huge span of people. Also Jane Fonda. So her dad, obviously, Henry Fonda, and then her mom is a socialite and, or was, she died early in Jane Fonda's life, but she was also a distant relative. Her mom was a distant relative of Lady Jane Seymour, who is the wife of, a wife of Henry VIII. So, like, I just bring those things up because her dad is a super famous actor. Her mom's a socialite who is a relative of one of Henry VIII's wives. And she launched her career, Jane Fonda did, as a fashion model, was on the cover of Vogue a couple times. Then in the 60s, she decides to start making movies. She starts in 1960 making movies. She had done some acting on stage in the 50s. 1960, she makes movies. Between 60 and 68, when this movie came in, 18 movies. She made 18 movies in 8 years. So that is kind of fascinating to me that she's got this whole family story behind her. 18 movies in 8 years. Plus, she's also dating the director. I mean, not, she's with the director in this. And also, on top of this, she has sort of, in the late 60s, begun her role as an activist. Like, she's doing a little bit of activism that's going to continue to be a much bigger deal in her life in the 70s. So it's like 60s is kind of, she's making a ton of movies. 70s is kind of, she's a really wild activist. 80s, she's just doing a lot of exercise bits.
It's time to work out.
She's
trying to get
got
my
a lot
body
going
back.
On. The only other thing I want to say about this movie, because she is full, she's completely naked. The
Hell
movie
yeah.
starts
right away
with her completely naked.
That's how you start a movie.
The first 2 minutes, complete, full tits.
Yeah, titties hanging out. Titties in space.
So I want to bring that up because 1 year later, in 1969, she gets a Best Actress Oscar nomination for They Shoot Horses, Don't They? Which is a really serious movie about depression and like life as a rat race. So I just want to bring that up because somehow after this movie, the Academy was still able to be like really serious about her. She got a serious dramatic acting nomination to be Best Actor 1 year after being wearing a skunk costume with her tits out.
She's a five-tool player. She can do it all.
It's a lot. There's a lot going on. She's a many. Hey, I think if this movie shows anything, Homegirl's a many tooled player. Okay, so that's what we know about everybody that's in this movie. So let's also, I'm just going to give it a little bit more context. I'm so sorry, there's like so much to say on this. So
There's a heavy amount of context on this movie.
A couple things to say also. All right, well, where does this movie fall in terms of sci-fi films? Because it takes place in outer space. So Star Trek, the original series, starts in 66. So this is just 2 years after one of the first times that we've really seen, hey, what could space look like on a soundstage? What kind of helmets would we wear? We haven't been to space yet in terms of the moon landing. That's 1 year later in 69. We know that we're trying to do that in 68 when this movie comes out. Also, other movies that came out in 68, 2001 A Space Odyssey and Planet of the Apes. So there's like this want to visualize space, but we haven't captured it yet. I mean, Star Wars, A New Hope, doesn't come out till 77. So this is really a movie that's, I mean, because it's weird. There's like an ice rink in it, and there's like weird spaceships that are like made of
shag carpeting?
Yeah, shag. Her spaceship is made of shag carpeting.
It's
How would you keep that clean in space? I don't think vacuums work
well,
in vacuums.
No gravity, just floats up.
Well, that's
dirt
why
just
she's walking around butt naked all the time, so she didn't have to worry about, like, I gotta clean this, I gotta clean that.
Right.
Natural,
also,
girl. Natural.
I also love how much it's clear, and I realized it when I was watching it, like, oh, they just came out with plastic, because there is plastic everywhere.
There's a lot
she
of plastic.
Sleeps on plastic. There's just, like, random plastic blown up bags.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This is what the future looks like, this stuff.
But it's also funny because the spaceships in this movie look unlike anything. I mean, honestly, maybe Earth Girls Are Easy has as goofy looking spaceships as in this film. So I was, like, wondering, wait, have we just not seen a bunch of spaceships yet? Like, are we not familiar with what the inside of a spaceship? And the answer is no.
Right.
We've totally not seen spaceships.
Right.
She doesn't
like
have, like, controls. You know, like, we think of a certain types of things when we're imagining spaceships now, and none of it is there. She's got a fucking Greek statue in her spaceship.
She's got that painting. What's the name of that famous painting?
Isle of La Grande Jacques.
Yeah, just hang it. Just the shit that she has in that ship.
It's just a really, it's awesome.
That's where she kicks it.
Yeah.
Hey, bring that painting.
It's my space pad.
So that's what's going on in terms of sci-fi, but I also want to talk about in terms of the sexual revolution. Because that's a huge thing that's happening in this movie. She is a loose space traveler.
Hell yeah.
She fucks a ton of dudes.
Gets in them guts.
So she fucks a ton of dudes. So, all right, here's what's going on. I you know, this is right in the middle of the sexual revolution. This is in 68 that this movie comes out. The pill, the birth control pill, debuts in 1960. So this is just 8 years after women have had the opportunity to take their own contraception for themselves. So, like, that's an interesting thing going on here. And then when the pill comes out, that's bringing up all these new issues of premarital sex and whether or not that's okay. We're trying to understand female sexuality. The feminine mystique is coming out 5 years before this movie made. This is also 1 year before the Stonewall riots, which would kick off the gay rights movement. And so there's sort of a, because I watching this movie now, it's unclear whether or not she is, like, the issues that we talk about now in terms of sex, like consent or agency or even enjoyment, like, some of that is a little bit hazy. But I think to realize that women are just taking command of their sexuality for the first time, and also that nudity on film, super taboo. So when she starts this movie naked, I thought to myself, oh, like, how debasing, how embarrassing for her. But I actually, there's a different way of looking at it where maybe that's, like, her being, like, you know, taking it. That's her fucking, like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm naked. You know, like, and not in an objectifying way, but in, like, a, you don't have to look at me and wonder if I'm interested in sex. I'm going to be completely nude.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm into it.
No, totally, yeah. When she starts taking off her clothes, I mean, to me, that was like, her taking off her clothes is her putting on her superhero outfit. Like, I'm fucking sexy in this movie, and I'm showing you right off the bat, and here's my name. It's the name of the movie, goddammit. Boom. Like, I was on board with that right away. I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. I love, man, back in the fucking 60s, people did drugs and fucked and wrote about it and then made a movie about it. Like, that's hot.
It's some serious stuff that's happening. So I want to start today with the worst part of this movie. We're going to start with our worsts today. So, Rhea, I'm going to start with you. What is the worst part of Barbarella?
I can't believe that I'm going to say this.
Yes.
But it was incredibly hard for me to come up with a worst part of this movie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was incredibly hard. Yeah. So hard. I guess I would have to say the plot, because it makes almost no sense. There's just so many things just getting added on and added on and added on. And, like, you don't really know. There's no galaxy.
It's almost
just
surreal.
Everything's,
like, it's almost a surreal film.
Kind of there. I mean, and then now even talking about it, I'm like, well, it's not that bad. So, like, see, I'm having a hard time finding anything bad with this movie.
She digs it. All right, Ricky, what's your worst part?
I was on the same part where I stopped. For, like, the first 20 minutes, I was like, all right, do I need to know who this person is?
Yeah.
Do I need to know who this person is? And then I was like, no, fuck all that. This movie isn't about...
Just in for the ride.
Yeah. Just enjoy it for what it is. So, I mean, there wasn't really a worse part for me as much as, like, I just need to adjust my brain to this kind of storytelling that's happening right now. Because, yeah, that's like, now she meets this person, and she's going to hang out, and they're going to bone. And then she meets this other person, and now she's trapped. And now she's in space. And wait, how the fuck did she just get in that room? You know, it's pretty insane.
Yeah, it is insane. I would say that my worst part is honestly just the tone is a little bit unclear to me.
Sure.
And I think part of that is because I honestly don't know if the director is telling Jane Fonda to be funny. I also don't know if she is funny. I'm not saying that it, like, because I think the film is, it's obviously satire, and I just feel like there's some parts where I don't know that I needed it to be funnier. I just feel like there were a few parts where I wasn't sure, like, so wait, are you into this or not into this? Like, I couldn't tell if they were being super serious or if it was meant in irony. Did you guys have that experience at all where you were just watching it trying to figure out, like, oh, so she wants to have sex or doesn't? Like, are we pro her having sex or are we against? You know, like, it's just...
I always felt that it was pro her having sex, like you just said, because it just, there's so much that happens, not necessarily like ABC plot storyline, but just like in the visuals, like I said, like the opening, the credits of her like taking off her clothes, like everything is her being in charge and like, you know, either willingly giving herself over to the man or the man practically begging, like, please, can we have sex? You know, it's so I always just got the impression of like, oh, I'm watching this woman who is in charge of her body and smanging it with dudes.
I guess time just would have made a little bit more sense just on that point. I wanted like one scene where she suggested a little bit more. And I guess with Pygar, the angel, she kind of does bring it up. So it's,
yeah, with him, she wants to get it out.
She brings it up. So maybe the point is like, hey, if you say yes to dudes enough, then you'll figure out how to ask dudes. Like, that's kind of what the movie is teaching us. And I don't know. But that's an okay. I guess that is an okay story. I don't know. It's a mixed message for me a little bit.
Well, I think to agree with you, the climax of when, sorry,
but, yeah, drop him, girl. Just say that shit.
When Duran is like torturing her in
he
that excess
catches
machine,
catches her and he tortures
and
her
he's
in
like,
an orgasm machine,
like pleasuring her to death. But it's essentially rape in a weird organ. And then she's like, she is kind of ashamed that she was into it. And then he's saying, "Have you no shame? You should have just died or whatever." And she's not like, haha, I did not. I enjoy this. F you. Or whatever. Like, that's what she should have been doing or laughing it off more. But it was like in this weird gray space of like, she did feel kind of bad.
Yeah.
She was into it.
That's kind of what I'm saying.
That,
like,
was the spot that I definitely
But
agree
I think
with
that's
you.
Maybe just due to the time. You know, like,
sure,
where we're showing a woman who's enjoying sex in 1968. I don't know if that looks like what a woman who's enjoying sex in 2013 looks like on screen.
Right.
Because
totally.
She breaks this. So the climax of the movie is that Duran, not the band, is capturing her and putting her into like a "you're having too many orgasms" machine.
Which I thought he was calling a scissors machine the first time he said it.
But hey, surprise on him, she can have a ton of orgasms and she breaks the machine. And that is like, what a great climax. Ha!
Boom!
What a great climax in the movie, but also a little bit weird because, yeah, I guess you just want to see that smile, that like knowing, but it's, you know... Again, I'm just trying to figure out, that could just be the time.
Also, that transitions perfectly into my best part of that movie.
All right, go with your best.
If you want me to go with it.
Go with it.
It is a line in that particular scene after she breaks the machine, when Duran is like, well, now what am I going to do? I have to take, you know, I have to like take over this planet or whatever and try to. So he delivers this line, and this is my favorite line. He says, "I find horrible the idea that one could do to me that which I do to others." Which is like the perfect definition of not understanding rape.
Yes, it is actually.
So I hate to bring it to a downer part, but it perfectly encapsulates that for me.
Because he is making her a party to his sexuality.
Yes.
And then he is saying, there's no way that you can have any control over my sexuality.
Yeah.
And that's what you're saying comes up in that moment. It is really crazy to see that.
It's so intense.
I don't know that rape was part of national conversation at this time.
Right.
So it's like predicting this dilemma that doesn't even exist in terms of how we talk. It's fascinating. Ricky, what is your best part?
I love the ass and the titties of this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked my favorite part easily is Jane Fonda. She was just I love that opening credit sequence where I was even. I mean, I know it's probably like just some old whatever special effect they did of her, like the whatever, you know, that thing coming down in her space helmet, and her hair is kind of like,
yeah,
just floating like that. She just looks banging in this movie. I was like, there's I'm gonna add her onto my list of Beatrix Kiddo, Ellen Ripley, Sarah Connor, Barbarella. You're on the list now. Now I am familiar with you, and you're on that level. I almost wonder, Jane Fonda. Now, when we think of Jane Fonda, she's very, you know, I think of her like very serious. She's like, she's like Prince now. Where it's like, yeah, I did all my fucking,
yeah,
I'm good. You know, now I'm gonna start living this life. Just it made me want to. I'm like, I need to know more about Jane Fonda. I want to watch Clute. That's the next thing I need to do.
So that's really interesting they said that, because I think I was gonna talk about something else, but fuck that. That could be my favorite part too, Jane Fonda, because even just in you saying that, you know, what is interesting about her, and I guess maybe this is why there's a mixed message, but I like this now that I'm thinking about it, is like, I was even saying to our producer, Lindsay, before the show that she has like Jane Fonda just naturally has kind of a deep and serious voice. And also she's gorgeous in this movie. I mean, she's a model. She's got perfect body, beautiful face, but she's also like, kind of Jane Fonda. She's like, you know, short. She talks like in short spurts, and yeah, also has kind of a deep voice, like in a way that, in kind of a Sigourney Weaver way. And it is interesting to think about, like, in a post Marilyn Monroe world, somebody being very sexy while still being kind of like humorless and also not at all come hither.
She's not demure at all.
Like, there's no part of this where she... I mean, you could honestly believe that if this movie was remade now, that she would be, like, farting or something. Like, she's just kind of uncouth in this one way. You know what I mean? Where she's like, there's nothing...
They want to remake it with Rose McGowan, so that
so Rose
makes
McGowan
total
would totally
sense to
fart
me
in a movie. I can see that.
She's probably ripping ass right now. So.
Yeah. But do you know what I mean? Like,
totally.
She's not... She's effortlessly amazing, and she also finds all these outfits because every guy that she sleeps with, she's like, by the way, my clothes got all torn on my way here. And then they just give her some, like, she's wearing a skunk outfit. Yeah. She's wearing like a...
She trips on the tail inside the spaceship and just,
I gotta get rid of this tail.
Rolls through the shag carpeting.
I would love every time she walked into a room, she would almost like take like a moment to like hit a pose. Like,
yeah,
no, I'm wearing this.
Yeah.
You believe this outfit?
So, you know, maybe part of the confusion that I'm having with the tone is just that I don't know where to put her in the lineup of sexy women. Like, where do you put a sexy woman who's also, like, kind of awkward?
Yeah.
You know, in that way that she is. And so...
She's the awkward minus the awkward kind of outfits. Like the...
Yeah.
Kind of like the awkward, like, pixie girl who's hot in movies now.
Yeah.
She's, like, sexy.
She's like the dork who they take off her glasses,
yeah,
and then she's hot.
Yeah.
Except that she just never has glasses.
She never had glasses.
She got the makeover, but they didn't erase her personality.
Yeah, exactly.
And can Lady Gaga start sending her checks?
Yeah.
We know you're getting it from Lady
That's
Gaga.
That's amazing. All right, so just to conclude our review, I want to go around. So Rhea, on a scale of 1 to 5 leotards with a skunk tail, how many leotards with a skunk tail do you give Barbarella?
I'll give it 4 leotards with a skunk tail.
Okay, all right. Ricky, on a scale of 1 to 5 Duran Durans, how many Duran Durans do you give?
I'll give it 4 Duran Durans. If I had taken acid before, I'd probably give it the full 5.
Yeah.
I'd probably understand it more.
Absolutely. All right. I'm going to give Barbarella, I'm going to give it 4 sexy angels as well. I'm going to give it 4 sexy angels. It could even bump up to 5 on certain days, like you're saying, you know, under certain substances, or even just like on a Wednesday when you weren't necessarily expecting too much going on. You pop on Barbarella, I'm sure it'll surprise you.
I think if I can say one more thing, I think if we ever watch it again, do you think like now knowing like, okay, this movie's not going to make a lot of sense, it'd be a lot easier to enjoy.
Totally. I was saying this is the perfect movie for every bar that is piping in different music to play on TVs
great
to
background.
Set an awesome atmosphere.
Absolutely.
So listen, if you own a bar and you're listening, fucking pump Barbarella.
Hell yeah.
And in the music department, obviously, Duran Duran.
That's what's
sure.
up.
It's perfect.
That's what's up.
So we are going to leave you with this, and thank you so much for listening. Rhea, what are you thinking about this week?
I am thinking about Mr. Ricky Carmona and his birthday this week and how much awesome music he's been introducing me to over the past couple months. So, yeah, I'm thinking about Ricky.
Oh, that's amazing.
Come on now.
Ricky, what are you thinking about this week?
Well, Rhea, it's funny that you mentioned that about music. Because, hey, everybody, I thought I had friends out there. Sometimes when I find a song late or I hear about something, I'm like, how come nobody told me about this? This song, Blurred Lines, by Robin Thicke and Pharrell and T.I., and the video, if you have not seen this video yet, it falls perfectly in line with Barbarella. The video is Robin Thicke, Pharrell, and T.I., surrounded by beautiful, beautiful topless women, all shapes, all sizes. It's amazing. Blurred Lines. Holla at that song.
All right.
And I'm
pulling it up on my phone right now. No, I'm not doing it. But I will.
I'll get it to you.
All right, great. Love all that stuff. I want to do a shout out to another Maximum Fun podcast that I've been listening to a lot this week. I've been listening to The Memory Palace. Nate DeMeo brought this show, or Jesse Thorne here at Maximum Fun asked Nate to begin a partnership with Maximum Fun this year. And I'm just so glad of that. This is an awesome short history podcast. Each of the episodes is like less than 15 minutes, 15 minutes absolute max. And it's just this really great glimpse into different moments in history with a different lens on them. Nate has an awesome voice and a great sensibility. If you're not listening to The Memory Palace, you should be, and I just want to give a shout out to Nate. He's doing an awesome job. So for next week, we are going to be revisiting Bad Boys. A bunch of reasons. Number one, old summer blockbuster. Number two, we're getting used to seeing Will Smith's face again because we're going to see a lot of him on billboards coming up. So yes, we are going to watch Star Trek Into Darkness, but we're going to take a couple weeks to make sure all of you guys have seen it so that we can talk about it together. So next week, Netflix watch instant, Bad Boys, and that was also listener suggestion. So if you guys are into suggesting movies, you can find there's a place on the forums, on the Max Fun forums. You can put your suggestion in, and we will watch it along with you. Until next week, I'm Cameron Esposito.
I'm Rhea Butcher.
I'm Ricky Carmona.
And you've been listening to Wham Bam Pow. Wham Bam Pow is recorded at Maximum Fun headquarters by Lindsay Pavlis. Thank you, Lindsay, and Maximum Fun, and thank you for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.